and I treat the listeners like my son, there's one thing that I'll always impart on my son, and that's just never give up on having faith in yourself. You know, don't ever sell yourself short. Don't ever think that you're not capable of doing that.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today. Are you in the mood for getting out of your house this evening? Head over to Boyer's Tavern in Rexmont, PA. They have appetizers, soups, salads, wings, mouth-watering burgers, sandwiches, and many other entrees to choose from. Proper food and drinks made by slightly improper folks. Head over to Boyer's Tavern today or give them a call at 717-450-4063. In this episode, we have Eric Allen, author, founder, and U.S. Army helicopter instructor pilot. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making the trip. You currently live in Wilmington, Delaware.
I do.
So that's a good, hour and a half?
You know, it really depends on the traffic. Yeah. But hour and a half is good. And that's not bad. I mean, yeah. You can get lost in your head in an hour and a half listening to podcasts or, you know, YouTube videos, and before you know it, it's over.
Yeah, well, exactly right. I think the radio is great, but for me, I love audiobooks and podcasts.
Yeah.
It just makes the time go so much quicker.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I was telling my grandfather yesterday, you and I were talking off air. He's the one that started ColorTech here, and we're inside the studio. And I said, yeah, I have a gentleman coming from Wilmington, Delaware. He's like, from Delaware. And I said, yeah, out of state. And I was like, yeah.
All the way from Delaware.
From Delaware, yeah. He's like, you're famous or something, Austin. He said, I'm like, no. It's just, you know, how did you hear about the podcast? Do you remember?
I got to be honest. I don't remember how I heard about the podcast. I think it's probably just one of those things where I went down a wormhole on social media and I stumbled upon it. The content seemed interesting to me and I just started following the page. And then I just remember at one point you kind of gave a shout out like, hey, if you're interested in, you know, getting on the podcast, yes, reach out to us. So that's the best I could tell you. I don't really remember when I stumbled upon it. It was a few years ago, but yeah, your content was interesting to keep me going. So
that would make sense. Yeah, social media, and I'm always looking for new guests. So yeah. I'm glad that, you know, you took the time to fill the form out. This is our first time meeting. And again, I appreciate you making the trip. So. Sure. If you could, Eric, give us some background about yourself. Where were you born and raised in early childhood, that kind of thing?
Yeah, born and raised in Syracuse, New York. And, you know, I lived there for the first 22 years of my life. It was not a very exceptional upbringing. It was just probably as mediocre as most people's lives or childhood. And then at the age of 22, I joined the Army and ended up taking off and going over to Germany. And honestly, since that point, you know, I did move back to Syracuse once, and I lived there for like another year and a half, but I haven't been back there on a long-term basis since then. So since the age of 22, I've just been bouncing around with the military, spending the majority of that time over in Germany. You know, I've lived in Alabama, North Carolina, Florida, now Wilmington, Delaware. So I've just pretty much been all over the map.
Okay, so at age 22, what was the drive to join the military?
You know, it's funny because I shipped off to basic training at, January 16th. So like I said, January 16th was the 23-year anniversary. And you think January 2002, that was just after 9/11. Right, so a lot of people think that the two are very correlated, but they're actually not. Of course, 9/11 moved me like it moved everyone, but I think the thing was, it was a matter of timing. It was like the perfect timing. You know, I was kind of at a point in my life where I was getting in trouble. I really had no path cut out for me. I had like 15 college credits, a GED, so I really wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't doing anything. And my brother was pursuing the Army at that point. He was interested in it, so he started feeding me thoughts, and he planted that bug in my head, and that's what it was. It really was just a matter of timing. And so I ended up just considering something that I'd never even considered. In fact, I had a pretty strong aversion to any kind of army or discipline lifestyle, you know.
And is that why, like, at that age you were kind of getting in trouble? You mentioned you like were kind of getting in a little trouble or something.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I talk about that in my book. So my childhood, you know, my father was a little bit of a tyrant, very tight control. And, you know, I think probably till the age of 15 or 16, I was very much under his thumb. You know, he was just kind of dictating my life. And then by the time I had broken free from that control, which was about 4 years after my mom and father separated, I just kind of went wild. And, you know, my mother was trying to raise three teenagers. So she's like, man, I can't possibly keep them controlled. You know, she was just struggling just to keep working, keep paying rent, keep putting food on the table for three teenagers, let alone just raise them. So I just went wild. And ever since the age of like 16 up to 22, I was just kind of living life by, you know, by the moment, you know, and just no path. Like I said, you know, I got my GED and I'm surprised I even did that. I just, one thing after another, I was always getting in trouble, you know, mingling with the wrong people. Luckily, I didn't go down the path where I started getting involved with drugs or hard drug use like some people do. But, you know, I gotten involved with the wrong people, and we just seemed to waste a lot of time doing nothing but getting into trouble, hanging out, just pretty much wasting life, you know? Yeah.
Walking into the recruiter's office, like, what was that experience like?
Well, you know, anytime I talk to somebody who's interested in joining the military these days, a lot of times what I actually recommend for them is take somebody who knows that lifestyle with you. Take somebody who can actually be smart enough to articulate certain questions. Because if you go in there, it goes from the conversation of you having questions that you want to address to them kind of telling you what they think that you want to hear. And that's not what you want. You know, you don't want to go in there with this expectation as a young guy saying, hey, I want to be an Army Ranger. And then next thing you know, they're like, you know, you'd be a really great cook or an engineer, you know, something like that. And you let them kind of drive you in the direction that they want because they have numbers that they have to meet. So, you know, if somebody wants to join the military, I say, hey, just take somebody with you who knows what they're doing. I didn't have that. So I went in there
from experience. Right?
The good thing is though, you know, my great grandfather was in the military. My brother and I did a lot of talking, and while neither of us had actually served before, we both knew one thing, that we could not imagine serving in the military in a role other than combat arms. So we knew we wanted to be either infantry, you know, work in tanks or something like that. So I just wanted something challenging. That had just been my lifestyle. I always wanted to do the more difficult thing. And I wanted something that put me close to action. So I ended up choosing a job that I thought was that. And luckily for me, you know, that's just the type of thing that recruiters want people to go into, you know, they want to put you in combat arms jobs. So yeah, I wouldn't say I was nervous, but I definitely felt like I was, you know, a fish out of water.
And at least you had your brother to go with, right? Because you're both going through the Army.
Well, we would talk. He didn't actually go with me to any of these things. I would kind of wander in. And, you know, to some degree, I did get bowled over. I did get pushed around. I mean, the recruiters did lie to me to a certain degree. Not that that's a common practice of theirs. But, you know, one of the things I will never forget is I had my heart set on just going to Germany. I'm like, I just want to get out of here. Yeah. I want to go to Europe. I want to serve over in Europe. just because I needed a change of pace. I needed to mix things up. And, you know, so I started talking to the recruiters. And when we went down to do all the paperwork and actually do the contracts and everything else, the man who was in charge of the contracts, like, I can't get you Germany. I can get you, you know, somewhere closer by. So he goes into this room. He comes back out and he said, I got you Fort Polk, Louisiana. I'm like, wow, Louisiana, yeah. You know, I'm from the north, you know, we talk about mosquitoes. I do not like snakes, you know, It's just hot, humid. We're talking about swamp, you know. And then luckily this one guy, this E5 said to me when the gentleman was out of the room, he said, look, if you want Germany, if that's your goal, do not relent. Just let him know it's either that or I'm walking. So I stood up and I go to walk to meet the guy, you know, to wherever he was making calls, and he comes back and he passes me and said, I got you Europe. So that was like my big thing. And I'm lucky that I didn't just let the man say, you know, screw Germany. You're not getting Germany. I got you Louisiana. And then I just put my head down like, okay, that could have happened. You know, I was very green back then.
So how does it work? Did you go through training and everything? Probably basic training, I imagine, you know.
Absolutely.
Then did you finally get to Germany? Like,
yeah, I did. Yeah. And it was the greatest thing too. That was the best time of my life by far. I look back on that time, you know, the early 2000s, and I'm like, man, I really miss that time. Miss everything about it. But you ship out. I signed up in November of 2001. I left January of 2002, January 16th. Four months of long basic training, one station unit training is what they call OSIT. And I just, it just went through a rude awakening there. I went in at 153 pounds. I gained like 15 pounds while I was there of muscle. You know, you get that discipline, you get that structure. You know, you're not that kid that just gets to eat whenever they want anymore and just go dig in the fridge. Now you're going to wait till breakfast, lunch, and dinner. A lot of things, you know, the Army's really good, or I'll just say the military is really good at tearing you down and rebuilding you back up. And that's what they want. As you go back in, they want to build that dynamic. They want to build the camaraderie, the teamwork aspect. And so they just tear you down. You know, everything that you represented or that represented you before you went in, it just becomes a part of your past. Now you're part of a team. You're part of something bigger than yourself. And they want to remove that, not completely, you know. Of course, they want you to still have your individual personality, but they want to tear it down and build you back up into this person that's more mentally strong, you know, more capable of working on a team, just really team oriented, you know, goal focused.
What was your assignment?
I became what they call a Cav Scout, you know, which it sounds what's exciting.
That? Yeah,
nobody really can put there. So I wanted armor, right? Infantry didn't really appeal to me for some reason. My brother, he went infantry. He loved it. For me, you know, I wanted armor. I wanted to go down that road. And initially, I had my heart set on becoming a tanker. I'm like, man, how cool would that be to be driving a tank around, you know, just eventually become a tank commander, that kind of thing. It would be cool. It really would. But then I wanted something that was a little bit more challenging, a little bit more elite. And I saw in the same category as armor, you have your tankers and then you have your scouts. And scouts are guys that are going out there, and they could be mechanized. They can be in vehicles, or they could be like what I was, which was light cav. And that's guys, scouts that get dropped off by helicopter, or they drive in Humvees. And what you're doing is you're pulling reconnaissance. So the purpose of the job is to go behind enemy lines.
Yeah.
And you're essentially like moving all night and sleeping all day. And you're just sitting there in a bush reporting on enemy positions and calling in artillery on them. So it just sounded like a really awesome thing, you know, and it was. It was such a great experience. I just loved being in that field. So being a Cav Scout just seemed like the perfect fit for me.
Let's take a sip break.
Sure.
This sip break is brought to you by Garage Beer. From the garage to the cooler, whether you're on the golf course, just got done cutting your lawn on a hot summer day, or spending some quality time on the grill, grab yourself a garage beer. It's just beer-flavored beer. You get into becoming like a helicopter pilot and everything, so how does that progress? Like, let's go from your time as a scout and then kind of progressing forward.
Well, the funny thing was, so like you said, it's almost like being a spy.
Yeah.
I could see that aspect, but for me, it felt more like special forces. You know, I felt like a Green Beret or, you know, something, a Ranger, Delta Force, whatever. Because I remember just my first assignment, right out of basic training, they send me on my first deployment. Next thing I go from being this kid that had no direction in his life to now I'm humping, you know, 80 pounds on my back up and down mountains in southeastern Europe, you know, in a battle or a war zone. So, you know, you go from just being this kid to all of a sudden you're walking around with 210 rounds on you, a weapon that's loaded all the time, having all this equipment. And then just during that portion, those first few years, like there was just something about it. I just loved the challenge. I loved being out there. I loved the hard work. And it just made me feel like I belonged in this certain field. So I ended up going out for Special Forces back in 2004. Right after I got married, I left 2 weeks later to go try out for Special Forces to become a Green Beret, to go through their assessment. And that is a grueling 30 days, just beat you into the ground experience. But I made it through that. And I'm like, great, now I'm going to start my goal of becoming a Special Forces operator. This is going to be perfect. Yeah. So, you know, we moved from Germany to North Carolina, entered the pipeline, and about 8 months later, I washed out, which is, it's common. You know, it happens. A lot of people, they start, even my selection class started with 200 people and finished with 96. So there's a high attrition rate because they want people who just have it. And, you know, being 24 years old, I just had that, that young, immature, you know, still a little chip on my shoulder, a little attitude from back in the day. And it didn't work for them, which was absolutely fine because when I didn't make that and they put me on a timeout, I just ended up getting out. You know, I said, you know, I'm done with this. I'd had a rough last year and a half of just getting beat into the ground, trying to achieve this goal. I'm going to go back to school. So I ended up getting out, going into the reserves. And then I just used that reserve opportunity to help pay for college. And it was during that process where I was working on my degree that I put in my packet to become a helicopter pilot.
Okay.
Got picked up on the first board, which was fantastic. And in 2008, and that's it, I was off to Alabama to become the new thing, which was a helicopter pilot.
See, when you say washed out, you threw in the towel or how does, I don't know how it works, you know, and I mean, you're going for an elite position, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you seemed like you were so close. What did you say, like 8 months in or something?
I was 8 months in. I was, you know, I would not have had a long stretch to finish up. You know, they have a few more phases after the one that I washed out, which is like your job-specific phase, language school, and then two more after that. And, you know, language school I would have gone through. I speak German. I would have made the others probably in less than a year, it would have been, to continue everything.
Yeah.
I did not quit. That was a good thing. That's one thing I look back, you know, because quitting's just not in my nature.
You don't seem like a quitter. No. You definitely don't. Yeah.
It's not in my nature. And, you know, it's really tough because I do remember this one time where, you know, getting through selection was far easier than the rest of the course. Selection, you know, at least I was getting 7 hours of sleep.
Okay.
Much of it is, you know, on you, that you're not allowed to wear a watch. So when you go out for runs, they're just they're looking at your time and your speed, and you're not allowed to know how well you're doing. So you can't sit there and say, oh, wow, I'm running an 8 minute pace. I'm running a 7 minute pace. I'm doing good. No, just go out there and try as hard as you can and whatever you come at. And, you know, their motto was always, don't be late, don't be last. So everyone's just gunning to not be last.
Yeah.
But I remember this one time in specific. Once I got into the next phase, which is like phase three, it was tough because that's where you're literally going out for 5 days at a time to do these mock missions. You're sleeping in about 45 minutes a day and you're eating one meal a day. So it's really, they're just wearing you down. It was cold. It was December in North Carolina. And you don't think, you know, North Carolina is going to get that cold, but overnight it drops down into the 20s, you know? So you're freezing. And I will never forget this one time. We're laying on the ground. We're in our little formation and we're pulling security. And this one guy, this one cadre member who was a member of Delta Force comes up and he's just eating a donut. And he looks all cool. You know, he's got his hat on. He's got a puppy with him. He always had a little beagle puppy with him. And he says, you know, he gives us this speech about how Michael Jordan didn't make it, you know, into high school. He didn't get picked up for the high school team or whatever. I'm not sure what the exact story is. But he said, you know, even Michael Jordan wasn't a star in the beginning, you know. Mm-hmm. He had to just keep at it. And if you guys are not capable of doing this, there's no harm in quitting. You know, you can go back. We'll get you some hot coffee right now. And it was cold. I'm exhausted.
Just
you know,
twisted the knife in
it was
there.
That moment where you're just like, you know what, just get up and walk away. You know, what do you need this for? But I didn't. And it was funny because he said, you know, guys, I'm going to tell you in about 5 minutes, it's going to start raining. And you're, when you're cold and it starts raining, life is just miserable in that moment. So nobody gets up. Nobody walks away. We're like, all right, cool. And as soon as he gets in his truck, it starts raining. And if there was a point where I would have actually gotten up and quit, it would have been that one, you know, because it's freezing. It's raining. I hadn't eaten barely anything. You're just worn down, exhausted. But if you can make it through that moment, and that's how life is, like when things get bad, just make it through the next 5 minutes, then make it through the next hour, make it through the next day. And all those little goals, all those little wins eventually equal a big win over time. So as long as you can give yourself short-term goals, like extremely short-term goals, like getting over smoking, and just make it through the next 4 minutes, get through the craving, cool, you're done. Now move on to the next one. That's how it had to be. So that's how I'm able to not quit a lot of times, is I just, one, it's not my nature, but two, just little goals like, all right, just get through the next hour. Cool, I'm through the hour. Get through the next day. Get through the night. All right. Good. There's the sun. Perfect.
Yeah. You know? It's almost like baby steps, you know. You got to crawl. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's that personal growth, too. Because by you, you know, sticking it out, when, like you said, how many quit the class, it's like, that's you're growing as a person. You know what I mean?
You are.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer that through struggle, we grow. You know, through adversity, we develop into a much stronger form of what we are. You know, people that never face challenges, people that have life too easy, they're really missing out on the good stuff, the good growth. And when you expose yourself to struggle, to heartbreak, to setbacks, you know, you're really exposing yourself to the opportunity to become a new version of yourself, which is stronger, you know, if you make it through.
A better version.
Heck, yeah.
So, all right. So now you're helicopter pilot, you know. That must be a wild experience.
Like, yeah, that is, yeah.
So what do you do? Like, you have to learn how to fix it, I imagine, repairs and things? And,
No, thankfully we don't.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, tell me.
Yeah, they won't let, you know, once you are a helicopter pilot in the Army for a while, you end up going off into what they call a track. You know, which means like you put in the time, you put in the experience, you know, you've got the years and the hours under your belt. Now it's time for you to develop a specialty, because just being a pilot alone is not a specialty. And specialties are like, you can become an instructor, you can focus on safety, you can become a maintenance guy, or you can become a tactical guy. And initially I became a safety guy, but we do have warrant officers that focus on maintenance. You know, that's the track they go down. So that's the only time as a pilot you'll actually turn wrenches, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But even then, we have maintenance and crew chiefs that do all that maintenance for us. So the only thing really as a pilot that you need to do is just focus on being a good pilot.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's challenging, you know. It's as a scout, I deployed once. I had the opportunity to deploy twice, you know, right after I got married. My entire company went away to Iraq. At the same time, I was going away to Special Forces selection. So, and I was supposed to just link up with them if I wouldn't make it through selection, but I did. But as a helicopter pilot, you know, everybody needs helicopters. Every unit requests them. Everyone wants the help of the helicopter pilots. How are you going to get these guys forward? How are you going to get those guys picked up? Who's going to deliver ammunition and food to these guys who are way out in the middle of nowhere? Helicopters. So, my next 5 deployments were as a helicopter pilot.
Yeah. High demand. I mean, like high you demand. Said, yeah, you want to move troops into a certain area. It's going to be by helicopter, you know, especially I imagine Iraq, Afghanistan, a lot of mountains, a lot of treacherous terrain.
Yeah.
So how is it flying in? Like, do you remember certain missions, you know, of flying and dropping troops off or picking them up?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was actually, it's a lot of fun. So Iraq, you know, as soon as I finished flight school, my wife and I went over to Iraq. We went to Germany and then I went to Iraq very shortly after. And that was an interesting experience. And for me, I was still, as a pilot, just very green, just very, you know, wet behind the ears. I had been in the military for 8 years at that point, but I was still pretty young, you know, experience-wise. Yeah. And I felt, you know, like the underdog. I was the new guy. I was just learning to fly. I was just learning my job more, because you learn to fly in flight school, but you develop your skill when you go on to your job. So Iraq was more of me just sitting there in the seat. You know, yes, I flew quite a bit and I would learn, but, you know, I didn't really get the exposure to a dangerous environment, even though it was a dangerous environment, until I got to Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a different animal. You know, that's why they call it the Graveyard of Empires. It's a tough, challenging environment there. Yeah, I mean, even our base was at 7,500 feet pressure altitude. So we're way up in the mountains. We'd fly over mountains that were 13,000 feet, you know. So you're dealing with mountainous terrain. You're dealing with not just the threat of, you know, obviously what exists on the ground, which is, you know, bad guys, but you're dealing with the threat of the environment, which is rocky, mountainous terrain and, you know, high, hot temperatures, things that helicopters don't typically like to operate in because it limits their performance capability. So, you know, we've had guys crash the helicopters in Afghanistan, and there's not a lot going on there, except for, you know, Kabul. There is no cultural lighting there. So when there is no moon, it's like the surface of the moon. It's black. You can't even see a mountain right next to you.
Wow. Yeah.
It's terrifying.
That is wild.
And meanwhile, you know that if your helicopter goes down at any point, anywhere, that it becomes a fight for survival. So you just pray that nothing ever happens to you while you're out there. But luckily, you know, everyone is very connected on this network. So you might go down, you might find yourself out in the middle of nowhere, but it's only a matter of time before the good guys are overhead.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, that's comforting. You know what I mean? Like, because, I guess you don't think about how rough that terrain is and how mountainous. And, you know, if something were to happen, it's not like, you know, again, because people don't, we don't, you know, civilians don't experience this, but you can't go to Sheetz or Wawa and, hey, I need a car, you know, I need a phone, or I need gas, or I'm hungry, you know, I need something to eat. You know, if you go down out there, it would just be, you know, you and whoever, you know, is on your team that would survive, you know, an accident or something, crash.
And it's really interesting how much we become disconnected when we're in that environment. When we're in a deployed environment, like, you just kind of become this different person. You're exposed to different things. You almost feel like, to some degree, you don't fit in well with the rest of the world when you get back. That first, like, month, it's, you really have to reintegrate yourself. You know, you have to get reacquainted with your wife and your children or your friends and family. You know, it's just different because you're in this environment where you're just on guard all the time. Your stress levels are high. You're working, you know, for us, it was 12 hours a day, 14 days at a time. And then every 14 days you get one day off, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you're flying overnight missions. You're flying just long days. You know, there'd be days we'd fly 8 hours, and it's just day after day, it just kind of beats you down. And eventually you just become this, like, shell of a person who's just mission focused. That's all. And I remember going into certain, they call it FOBs, which is a forward operating base, where, you know, you'll have out in the middle of nowhere, just this little base of soldiers. There's probably like 100 soldiers there just pulling security at that place, or using that as a jumping off point to do their, you know, whatever, their touring, their recon missions. And we'll be going in there, and they'll call us and they'll say, hey, we're taking fire right now. And you're like, well, we're coming in. So,
you know,
it's funny because you can't imagine that when you're back here. You can't imagine getting to a point where somebody tells you, hey, we're taking mortar fire, we're taking machine gun fire from the mountainside. And you're like, well, we're coming in. You know, we got guys to pick up, we got guys to drop off, you know? Yeah. So you just focus more on doing your job, and that type of wording doesn't seem to faze you. You don't seem to get worried by the fact that, hey, in a second, I could be dead. Somebody's shooting, and I don't know. It's weird. And then you come back here, and you find yourself standing at Wawa filling up your coffee cup, and you're like, man, it's just so different than what I was experiencing a month ago. You know, you're just feeling two versions of yourself, which is a really strange experience for many of us.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, and you're so focused, like you're saying, you're so mission-driven, that you're, you know, not that you don't care, but you're on a mission. Even though there's, you know, people shooting, you got a mission to do, you know? Yeah. And, like, you're right, back here, you can't think of it. You can't even imagine it. I had some previous guests, service members, men and women, and one in particular, Matt Zechman from Kelowna Coffee Roasters. He said that his biggest thing when he came home was that, you know, when you're over there, on base, you know, for lack of better terminology, he said it's so secure, right? Everybody got a firearm. Everybody knows how to use it. You know, you got the guard towers, or you have watchmen. But he's like, when you come here back home, you got a locked door and that's it. You know, no one's really watching your back. Yeah. He said, so that's the hardest thing for him was getting used to not having all those people around you that are trained, you know, killers, really, you know. Trained professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's people that, you know, over there, they they don't really have much, you know, they don't have much. So
yeah,
they're not risking much by going after you. Or if somebody comes up and offers them, you know, $20 American to go to try to take a couple shots at the gate guards, you know,
yeah,
what do they have to lose? They're just trying to put food on the table. So
wow,
it's a different environment. It just is. You know, but that's how life is. That's how different life can be, is our experiences just shape us. You're in one thing one minute, experiencing this version of you that you didn't ever think was possible. And the next minute you're standing at Wawa filling up your coffee just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, I admire the fact that you were talking about how you're going business to business, trying to sell your business. Cause I love that. I love seeing guys doing that, just pushing themselves. And I think when you go through enough, deployments or experiences like that, to some degree, I don't want to say it makes you callous, but it does shed away some form of sympathy for people who find excuses all the time, you know. And I have, you know, friends that complain like, oh, I gotta go in an hour early today, or God, I gotta go do this. And
yeah,
you're like, all right, I don't really see the big deal. Like, you know, you become immune to excuses, and you kind of become a little cold towards people's excuses. You don't really find that sympathy as easy as you once did, you know?
Yeah.
So when I see guys like you getting out there, I mean, that's your livelihood, you know? You're putting food on the table. You're providing for your family. Like, 100%. The only option is to fail. And, you know, when you go through certain experiences with the military, it's the same thing. Like, you're mission accomplishment, that's what you want, and you're so focused on that when you're in that environment that enough times in that environment you come back and you just start looking at the rest of the world, and you start kind of, I don't know, maybe subconsciously judging people for not giving more effort.
Yeah,
when it's simple, you know.
Right, well, you get after it because no one else is going to do it for
exactly.
You
exactly. No one's coming to save you
at the end of the day. Right, no one's coming to save you. So, you know, it's like, you have your own business, you know, your own book, whatever it is, podcast, whatever, business-wise. Same thing with military. You know, if you're not going to do it, either somebody else is going to come and do it better, and you don't got a job that way,
yeah,
or, you know, like you said, you're going to fail. And no one wants to fail. And at the end of the day, especially if you have family, you know, failure is not really an option. You have to succeed, you know.
It's not.
Let's take a snack break real quick.
You got it.
This snack break is brought to you by Jergy Beef Jerky. When late night editing episodes for the podcast, Jergy Beef Jerky keeps me fueled and ready to go with 11 grams of protein, high quality ingredients, and no nitrates or nitrites. With 5 different flavors to choose from, Jergy Beef Jerky. Eat, meat, repeat.
Well, the good thing is, when it comes to how I came up with the idea of starting my business, was through being a pilot. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me about that.
There's a direct connection.
Okay.
So, you know, Planiversity, I started this business years ago, and it's undergone a number of pivots. I never thought starting a business could be so difficult. And more importantly, I never thought starting a software business could be so difficult, because if I actually had a product to offer someone, if I was selling, you know, coffee cups or mugs or something like that, it'd be a lot easier. Even my, you know, my former brother-in-law, like, he sells these trinkets, these things right here. He's doing amazing.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing amazing. His wife and him. And
what is that? It's like a hand necklace for the listeners? Or
No. So this is actually, this is stainless steel, and it's got this little gold chip inside. It's the same thing with this, same company.
Okay, bracelet.
And what these do is this little chip right here helps to alter the water molecular structure in your body, making the water more coherent. And when your body's in a more coherent state, a lot of things start opening up for you. You know, the capability to experience better sleep, to experience better meditation, clearer mind, you know.
Okay.
It does these things for you. So he found a very specific niche in his field, and now he's doing fantastic.
And what's the name of the company?
It's Chiblanco.
Chiblanco.
Yeah, I'll send you the link after
But it's
But it's funny, because ever since I started wearing this, I actually started feeling like this surge of like motivation, and I can't even explain it. It's actually fantastic. But, you know, when it came to my business, I never thought that selling software could be so difficult, because there's so many things to contend with. You know, nobody starts a software business and puts it online and all of a sudden it just starts making sales. It just doesn't happen that way. You actually have to push this thing. You have to tap into Google. Google's got something to say about it. If Google can't, you know, crawl your website and find certain, you know, imperfections cleared, they're never going to post your website. You know, you need influencers, you need businesses, you just need people to just try it for free and just let you know how it's doing. So it's a very difficult thing to do, as you know, business. It's just tough. Yeah. It's a constant battle. But the reason I got into this was, at one point, I'm looking at the things as a pilot that we do in life. I'm looking at, you know, every time we go somewhere, we know the weather. We know where we're parking. We know who we're talking to. We know how we're going to get there. We know what speed we're going to get there at. Everything. We plan everything so that our execution is flawless. And I remember saying to my, so it's my ex-wife now, but I remember saying to her at one point, like, why doesn't something like this exist for the civilian world? Why don't we have something like that? So every time we go on a trip, you know, we can put our information in, and then the system just compiles all that data and just pulls it together and says, hey, look, you know, here's all this. So now you actually have a plan for what you're doing. That was what really sparked it. And I found that over the years that just doing that wasn't enough. You know, I had to really modify the business. So we went from this like travel organization business where you plug in information and would organize everything and kick back a nice organized PDF to you.
Yeah.
To now being a project management software for people. So we call it people management software, where, you know, a company could use this and they could organize everything for you, everything from events to travel to jobs, appointments. And, you know, they generate this entire plan inside the computer, and then it blasts it out to an app for you. So you really have your entire schedule in front of you. You have all the documents you need, all the information you need. No more email, no more confusion. And I remember last year I was going to Denver to do this like flight training for this company I had been hired by, and they'd sent me like at least 10 emails, and some of those emails would contradict other emails. They would say, disregard that last email. Here's this one. Here's this information. Go with this. You know, here's the things that you need and everything. You know, I think the last four emails, I just stopped reading them. I'm like, you know what, this is too much. Like, I'll just get there and figure it out.
Right.
But that's not the right answer, you know? Yeah. The right answer would be, like, to make sure they don't inundate you with too much information, and make sure that you have the right information. And when something changes, the old information's out, the new information's in, which is what my business does.
Oh, wow.
So for you to deliver real-time updates for changes in information, hey, we just had an updated document come in. Now that old one gets removed, the new one comes in, you know, schedule change, and then you can sit there and comment on it so you're not getting lost. You know, what are you talking about? No, we're talking about this thing specifically. So it's meant to streamline people management process.
And there's an app for that? Or like, how do people find it if they want to use your service, like companies or?
So it can be found at planiversity.com. And then once you are there, you know, that's where you do all the planning. And then once you do all the planning, you can do all the managing from there. So it's not enough to just create a plan for somebody. Like, let's just say a travel agent, you know, always does travel planning for people. And she uses email or she uses whatever. Let's just say she wants to plan, you know, a trip for somebody. Now she can actually put all the information in, and she can be the one to actively manage everything. And the only thing they have to do is install the companion app, which is free, and they just receive information. Let her do everything. Nice. Let her put the itineraries in there. Let her put all the information. Let her tell you where you got to be at what time, or even a university who sends students abroad, you know, so the students don't have to worry about information flow. You know, they can say, here's everything you need. Here's all the scheduled times you need to meet, you know, and now there's like check-in features, there's commenting features. So now somebody could sit there inside the website after they created the plan and literally manage you while you're out there and say, okay, here's your next hard time to meet. Here's your next document that you're going to need, you know. Yeah. So it's really just
so helpful. Like, can you imagine a student over abroad, and, you know, it's a new world, really. And to have something in your pocket that's, okay, like you said, here's the times, here's where you got to be, you know, here's the contact person or whatever. Like, that sounds very, very useful.
Yeah. I might be sitting in my office here in Pennsylvania and you're in Spain, but I've got you. I've got you. Don't worry.
It's like having somebody over your shoulder almost, like, you know, making sure you're going the right way and doing the, you know, doing the right things at the right time. Planiversity. The name, you just came up with that and everything?
Yeah, it's funny because we invest so much time in just finding the right name for something. But I was doing the research back in the day, and I'm like, all right, okay, so research says that you need something that incorporates what your business does inside that business, like color tech, you know, solution. It's great. For me, I had to incorporate planning somehow, and that's really what it was. It's like, how do we put planning into it? So I come up with all these different names, and nothing was just grabbing me. And then I just remember sitting at my mom's table one morning. I was like, University of Planning. Planiversity.
Like, it just hits you.
It's like the one place you can go to, like, enhance all of your planning needs. And, you know, it's It could be used for events. You know, if you have 20 people, and that's the other great thing, is you can connect as many people to one plan as you need. So you might have a plan for just, you know, Bob and Linda for their trip to Spain or Greece, and then you might have another plan that has 20 people going on this retreat to Israel or whatever, and you want to be able to feed all of them. So now all 20 people are on the same plan, you know, and everyone's getting the same information. Everyone's on the same page. It just really simplifies communication flow.
Being a founder, you're also an author and a life coach.
Yeah. Well, the life coach is something new. The funny thing is, and I don't know if this is just some kind of self-realization, but people somehow look up to me, and maybe I'm undersimplifying myself or I'm not giving myself enough credit, but people look up to me for some reason that sometimes I can't see. They almost treat me like I'm a mentor. They value my opinion greatly, and I'm like, I don't understand why you care what I think. But, you know, at some point I'm like, you know what? I have achieved a lot. You know, I've written a couple books, you know, I've achieved this. I've gotten myself to the point where I earn really well, where I can start a business, where I can read a book. You know, I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I got my brown belt in that now. You know, I just success seems to come easier to me. You know, am I a billionaire? No. But success seems to come easy to me. And at one point I think it just kind of clicked to me, like, maybe there's something I can help with. Maybe there's guys out there, especially guys, you know, who are in their 40s, who are starting to lose that spark, who are like, man, I'm not where I want to be in life. I don't feel the level of respect I want. I'm not quite in the relationship that I want to be in. I don't have the level of fitness that I want to be in. I just have this very disciplined, regimented lifestyle where I feel like, as a result of that, I could share. I'm not a therapist, you know, I'm not a psychologist. That's not my goal, to get in someone's head and help them overcome childhood trauma. My goal is to help men, especially over the age of 40, you know, get back to that spark within themselves, find that again, find their, you know, whatever you want to call it, but find that energy to go out and tackle life and succeed at things and just feel that feeling of, you know, progress in their lives where they can look at themselves in the mirror and say, I'm happy with who I am today, you know.
Well, and sometimes too, I think as people get older, you think, oh, I can't change career paths, or I can't, you know, Absolutely. do what I used to do. Absolutely. But I think you can. It's all how you feel, you know?
Life is, you know, it's funny because everything is context, right? We look at ourselves now, and I'm 45 years old. I look at myself and, yeah, I could very easily develop the thought process of, it's too late for me. I should have started this in my 20s. But in 20 years from now, when I'm 65, I'm going to look back and be like, what? At 45, I had so much time. I could have just started it then. I would have had all this time. And a lot of times, like, that's what we end up thinking about something. You know, I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when I was 38 years old, you know, so now I'm 7 years into it. I love it. I love it, love it. But, you know, it's one of the thoughts I had is, like, why didn't I start this sooner? Why didn't I do this in my 20s? You know, why didn't I do this when I was a teenager? Even in my 20s, I remember my buddy and I going out and learning, trying to learn how to skateboard. And I'm like thinking at the age of 23 that I was too old for that. I was like, I should have started this when I was like 15 or 16 years old. So everything is context. And, you know, it's very important for people to understand, especially at this point in life when they feel like everything's starting to slow down on them, that they can just recreate everything. They can go after it. They can start something new. There is no, I mean, you're really just putting your own limits on, but you can actually go out there. You can start training a new sport, get your body back in shape, get a new job, get a new skill. Like, it really just all depends on you.
I know people that are well in their 60s and they're able to outrun and out, you know, push up and pull up people in their 20s and 30s. Yeah. Like, it's pretty amazing if you set your mind to it, right? Yeah. What you can accomplish. And, you know, sometimes I think a lot of times people just get stuck in a path. And you're like, well, this is it. This is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, you know. And they don't bother to adventure out of that box, you know, and try new things.
And that's exactly where a life coach can come in handy. You know, we're not mentors. We're not therapists, you know. But sometimes we really just need someone to say, like, hey, you have plenty of time. Like, you know, let's develop a plan. Let's see yourself. So the whole thing behind my plan is, you know, I call this life absolutism. And what I want is to be able to help guys with a concrete timeline. I want to say, like, in 12 months, I can turn you into a new version of yourself. You know, by targeting these certain areas, these specific areas, we can turn you into a new version of yourself so that when you do look in the mirror and you compare yourself today to the version of you a year ago, you're going to be blown away.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of it is just targeting the most difficult part of the body to target, and that's the brain.
Yeah, you know? Is that the truth?
You have to go after the mind. Right? You have to just develop, you know, mental toughness. And when you get to the point where you're like, you know what, no TV tonight. I'm going to read. No social media. I'm going to jump on the computer and do something. You know, I've woken up early. I can choose to lay here until, you know, the alarm goes off, or I can say, you know what, I'm up an hour early. Go to the gym. Just go turn on YouTube and do a workout in the living room. Just using your energy, you know, building yourself. So I feel like I could probably help people get to that point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the level that you're at now, you know, and all the things you have achieved, I could see why people would maybe gravitate, you know, and if I was a young pilot coming up or something, I'd be like, oh yeah, this is a guy that I want to be around. You know what I mean? Don't they say, there's a saying, take your top five friends or the people you're around, and that'll tell you or show you what your future will be.
Yeah, you're the average of the five people you hang out
with.
Thank
you, that's it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I hear that a lot, but I don't really hang out with that many people. I hang out, you know, my best friend lives in upstate New York, still in Syracuse. My girlfriend is pretty much the only one I hang out with. I get my social interaction from when I go to the gym and I go to jiu-jitsu and I go to work. But other than that, I'm not out hanging out. So for me, I'm like, man, who am I the average of? Just my son, my best friend, and my girlfriend. Like, am I really that average? But, you know, you are the average of those five people, I suppose, if you're in that right environment. But if you don't surround yourself with people all the time, then you're probably just whatever you design yourself to be.
I want to mention, because you have written a couple books. You brought one here with you. Do you care to talk a little bit about that? And where can people purchase your books?
Sure. So I've written three books so far. I have two children's books and one adult book, which is the one you see in front of you. The children's books I wrote, it's funny because my son is the main character in the books.
No way.
And I wrote those for him because when my ex-wife and I separated, you know, my son was 4 years old. And, you know, it was a completely different experience. You know, him and I are very close. We're still very close. I mean, he lives in Germany. I live here, but I go over every month to visit him. You know, I'm there every month for a week. And he's just that important to me. And I wanted to find a way to help him through a children-focused effort, you know, overcome what he might be experiencing on the inside by dad all of a sudden not living there full time. And so I created my first children's book was about, you know, maintaining that connection between the son and the father, you know, even though they weren't technically right in each other's presence all the time. And that was through imagination. The other one was about, you know, my son overcoming fears, you know, and that actually like pulled jiu-jitsu into it, which was great. And then I wrote Killing My Self-Destruction shortly after those books came out because I look at it as a biography at the time that I was writing it, because I talked about everything from, you know, my childhood and upbringing to, you know, going into the army to, you know, moving out of my hometown to my divorce to everything, you know, after that up till 2018. And now I kind of look at it as like an admission instead of being a biography. It was like an admission of everything I felt like I had done wrong in my life up to that point.
Yeah.
And Killing My Self-Destruction, you know, to kind of paraphrase it, was about recognizing that as a child growing up in a mildly abusive home, that I had to subconsciously develop these manipulation tactics to be able to survive my environment.
Yeah.
And somehow, and I don't know how, and this could just tie into who I am today, there were certain things that were just very instinctive to me without anybody ever teaching me. And that was, you know, changing when I was getting bullied at school, just alternating my route home. And instead of taking the same way I always went home and getting bullied, would be to go this way that day and then the next day mix it up and go this way. I just instinctively did things like that without anybody ever telling me. Or when dealing with my father at home, just delaying my way home just so I wouldn't have to run into him because he worked second shift. So if I delayed my my trek home by a little bit. I wouldn't have to interact with them at all. And that just, you know, little things in my environment just throughout my childhood. So really that's what the book is about, is just learning as a young child that I had somehow cultivated the ability to manipulate, not in a bad way, not in a destructive way, even though somehow manipulation does follow you into adulthood and you have to learn to address that tendency, but more in the sense like as a means to survive, as coping mechanism. And not everybody's, you know, built with that. Not everybody has that. And that somehow I had developed that over the years and built, you know, mental strength through going through these setbacks, these things. And you can see on the cover, you know, it covers the, you know, the fighting and the childhood aspects, the military aspects, relationships. Yeah. So it was fun writing that, and I gotta say that everything just flowed out of me. Like
did it?
I
would
drop when I was writing that book, it just poured out of me like it was no problem, you know.
Yeah.
But I definitely wanna. I am working on my fourth book, my second adult book, and I'm really excited for it because this one is going to be more about using the strength that I developed over the years to help other people develop themselves into a better version. Just the whole life absolutism aspect.
Do you have a title?
Life Absolutism. Yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. So being, you know, that you're an author, a helicopter pilot, a founder, a coach, a life coach, is there one mentor in your life that you would give credit to or shout out?
Yeah. You know, as we were talking about this before, like it's very difficult to pinpoint sometimes somebody who's had this significant level of influence in your life. And the one person I can absolutely really just kind of tie a lot of things back to was my maternal grandfather. He was amazing. Yeah. He was a man of just integrity. I mean, I wished he had been my father. He was a fantastic person. He passed away, unfortunately, when I was 19 years old. So he never got to see the corrected man version of me. You know, he got to see the child. He got to see the screw up teenager, the guy that was making all the wrong decisions and just doing weird things with his life, unfortunately. But when I look back to him, and I just remember there's one thing that my grandfather always carried. Like, he was just a great man, but it was integrity. He just always had integrity. And integrity being like, I'm standing next to a piece of trash. Am I going to just walk past it, or am I going to pick it up and put it in the trash? That type of thing. You're gonna do the right thing whether or not somebody's looking at you, you know? So if you're by yourself and you have the opportunity to pass up on doing the right thing, and that's how they really test integrity, is like, can you do the right thing when nobody's watching? You know, can you do the right thing even though it's the hard thing to do? And he was just that guy. He was a very friendly guy. He was a very fair guy. He never liked, you know, I have that characteristic from him where I don't like it when people tell me what to do, but I'll do anything for somebody who asks me, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all about tonality. It's all about how you ask me, not what you ask me. So if you ask me to help you move on a Sunday, you know, I don't want to, but yes, you're my friend. I'm going to help you move. But if you say you got to be on here on Sunday, you're going to help me move. And it's like, no, I'm not really going to do that now because the way you just said that. But I just remember the level of integrity he had and the level of respect in the family. You know, his wife loved him and she respected him. My mom, you know, all of us, we just loved and respected him. And he was just a man of integrity. And we all knew that, and he kind of carried himself with that level of integrity. He's very well respected.
What was his first name?
Richard.
Richard.
Which is my middle name, yeah. So
there you go. Yeah,
he was an amazing, amazing man.
I think more people need to be like Richard, you know?
Yeah.
It's the little things that make a big difference. Holding the door for somebody, like you said, picking up trash, being proud of, you know, where you're from and taking care of the place you live, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was just that, you know, that quality about him where anybody would have known that if somebody was honest, somebody had integrity, like they'd look at him and they would never question that aspect about him. Would they count on him to like rebuild a car engine? Probably not. He's not that guy. But if you said like, no, Richard, no, he'll always do the right thing, whether you're riding him or not, you know, whether you're looking over his shoulder or not, he's going to do the right thing, you know?
Yeah, 100%. If you could leave a life lesson with a listener, something you've learned over the years so far, what would it be?
It'd be such a broad topic right there. But if I, you know, if I can condense this down and I treat the listeners like my son, there's one thing that I'll always impart on my son, and that's just never give up on having faith in yourself. You know, don't ever sell yourself short. Don't ever think that you're not capable of doing that. Yes, there's certain aspects that you have to come to terms with. Like me, if I all of a sudden decided I wanted to be a mathematician, I'm just not good at math. I'm not. I always struggled with math, but there are certain strengths that I have that are just inherent in me. And a lot of people, you know, of course you got to be within the realm of, you know, realistic, but I think most people don't give themselves a chance because they feel like they're going to fail something, or they feel like they're just not capable of doing it when in fact they are, you know? So I would always tell people, just don't give up on faith in yourself. Like, you're capable. And if you just take it, like we talked about earlier, take it one day at a time, take it 1 hour at a time, move forward consistently. You're going to find that you're just as well off as the people that you admire.
The items you brought with you, real quick, let's do like a wrap up on those.
Sure.
The coffee mug, the Syracuse coffee mug. Yeah.
So, yeah, Syracuse coffee mug. Yeah, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a football fan. I'm not a basketball fan. You know, my brother got that gene. He was the one who was very much into team sports. I've always been an individual sports guy. So he loves basketball. He loves football. I never loved him. But what I do love is, you know, I used to love running. I was a huge runner, especially when I was in Europe. Always, you know, I'd go out and do a 10-miler just as a casual, like, fun run on a Sunday. Jiu-jitsu, you know, skiing, those things, individual sports is like my strength. So it has nothing to do with the sports. It has everything to do with just hometown pride. And I really love my hometown. At one point I felt like it was a stain on my history, but now I look at it and I'm like, no, this place helped shape who I am today. Mm-hmm. And as a tribute to it, Planiversity, the official colors are orange and blue, to kind of give tribute to my hometown.
Very cool.
And then Killing My Self-Destruction. Yeah, you can find this on Amazon. You just do a simple Google search of Killing My Self-Destruction by Eric Allen, and you will absolutely find that. And, you know, some people have given it some good feedback. Other people have said, interesting. You know, it's just kind of a very introspective book of me just kind of recognizing the things that I'd gone through and what I gained from those experiences.
I think you're the first guest. We're talking off air. This is going to be episode 117, somewhere around there, to bring in a coffee mug.
Really?
And I hope it continues. I like the trend because, you know, everybody's got like their favorite coffee mug and there's a story to it.
I use that every single day.
See, that's what I'm talking about, you know.
Every single day.
I think you're the first guest that's actually brought a coffee mug.
And I don't put it in the dishwasher, which is why the color never fades. I always wash it by hand.
It looks almost brand new, yeah.
Yeah, it does look brand new. And I've had this one for, I want to say, 3 years now.
Okay.
I love it. Yeah. And every day, like, where's my Syracuse cup? Where's my Syracuse cup? Wash it, coffee. Yeah, something about it, you know?
Yeah. Now, if the listeners want to connect with you and follow along on social media, what's the best handles and where should they go?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get a hold of me on Instagram or find me on Instagram, it's simple, Eric R. Allen. It's just my first, middle, initial and last name. So very easy to find. And then, of course, the whole life absolutism thing, Planiversity, you can easily Google those and they'll pull up the web pages and, you know, pretty easy to find.
Awesome. And before we close out, is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we might have missed?
No, I don't think so. This has been a really fantastic conversation, actually.
Awesome. Well, I'll wrap it up then. Eric Allen, author, founder, and U.S. Army helicopter instructor pilot, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.